I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Leighton Hewitt, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport. Now, as well as our weekly show, which is out every Monday, and the daily shows at the Grand Slams, from time to time, we're going to be publishing special editions of the show, known as Tennis Podcast Extra. We'll feature some big interviews, emergency editions if we need to respond to news events in the sport, and a few standalone debates as well, because you know how Catherine and I do like an argument. First of the shows is going to concentrate on a big interview, that of Nick Kyrgios, who's been talked about a lot on this show. We'll be hearing from the man himself in an interview conducted by The Telegraph's Simon Briggs last month in Miami, and from his Davis Cup captain and mentor, Leighton Hewitt. Kyrgios and Andy Murray will both be playing on grass in the Aegon Championships at the Queen's Club in June, and Simon started by asking Kyrgios why he and Andy Murray get on so well.
I think he's a really caring guy. You know, I think we get along well. Not even, you know, at tournaments, but when I see him just, you know, around, we get along well. We like the same stuff. He likes basketball as well. But he's just a very friendly guy. He's very down to earth. I don't want to. He's a good bloke, like, you know. Yeah.
Sure. So last week you were talking about Adia coming back and on the tour and how that had given you quite a big boost. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a big part of the results you've had in the last few weeks, right?
Yeah, 100%. You know, I think the last 4 weeks I've had pretty good results. I'm in semi quarters and now in the fourth round. So, you know, I think that's the consistency that, you know, I've been looking for. It hasn't been easy at all. You know, I've been taking it day by day. Seeing her back on the court and just seeing her just getting back into the tournament has been helping me, because I've seen her when she was in a sling, you know, just after surgery, not being able to hit and in the dark place she was in, and, you know, kind of put a bit of perspective into my life as well. You know, after Australian Open, I wasn't in the greatest mindset, and, you know, I was in a pretty dark place, and then, you know, I thought about, you know, the position she was in, and, you know, I was in a pretty lucky position myself being healthy, so seeing her has been good. I mean, I'm seeing her more often is obviously helping my headspace as well.
Do you actually practice with her a bit as well?
Yeah, we practice a lot back in Boca. I'm probably her first option, I think. But
is she your first option?
Yeah, I think so. I think she's playing well from the back because of, you know, the standard that I bring to the practice court. We hit a lot, and, you know, hopefully we're actually trying to play. We're going to maybe play mixed doubles at Wimbledon, so, you know, it'll be good to see her back there and at a Grand Slam, and yeah, I mean, we practice a lot.
So one thing I've noticed is you talked about how much you enjoyed Davis Cup. You seem to be really enjoying doubles. I sometimes think that you just like talking to people, and you find it difficult when you're on singles court and you've got no one to chat to. Is that sometimes the case?
Yeah, I think, I prefer to have some company, but... Yeah, of course. I think I'm trying to play doubles. I think it's really helped my singles game a lot with my returns. I think I'm volleying a lot better. I think I'm coming forward a lot better. I'm trying to play a lot of doubles. I think it's developing my game as well. But I like, especially playing with a close friend like Matt Reed. I think we're going to try and play a lot of doubles moving forward. I mean, he's a great friend. I think it's just good to, you can't be always so serious when you step out on court. You know, I think singles is obviously where I want to have most of my great results, and I'm going to try and knuckle down. But doubles, I think I'm going to sort of lay back, and I want to win, but have that, you know, that element of fun as well.
because you always end up interacting with somebody. It just seems, whether it's the ball kid today as well.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you're playing someone like Ebo, you know, it can get a bit slow out there. You know, he's hitting a lot of aces past you. The game's not a lot's happening, so you try and keep yourself in the tank.
So John was telling me you normally get a place in Wimbledon for like 6 weeks. And what is it about London that you find fun?
Well, I think I can just find similarities between London and Australia. It's very homely. And obviously John lives there and he knows a lot of, you know, good places. But I love that time of the year. You know, it feels, you know, when you have your team around you and you have, you know, a nice house, and you obviously you're playing some of the greatest tournaments in the world, Queens, Wimbledon, you know, I mean, two of the best tournaments, I think. And you know, they run perfectly, they're so organised. I really enjoy that time of the year. It's like you're away from home, but at the same time you're at home as well. You know, you have the family there, closest friends on tour, so I really enjoy that time of year.
So your brother comes, your family, your mum comes?
Yeah, my dad always comes for Wimbledon.
Is sister ever come?
Sometimes, she came for a couple of days last year. But my dad always comes. That's sort of his period where he can sort of sit back and enjoy some tennis. But yeah, that's when he enjoys it the most there, I think.
You seem extremely close-knit.
Yeah, definitely. I'm very family-orientated.
And the other thing about Canberra is obviously you get sort of flack for being dull. I have been there, been to the War Museum.
Yeah.
Is that like the stereotype is not true?
Yeah, I don't think it's true. It depends what you like. You know, if you like a place where it's nice and quiet, it's very homely. You know, it's. I mean, I'm not. I obviously like to go out and have fun, but you know, I'm not all about partying and stuff. So, you know, I think that's a perfect place for me to get away from tennis with my friends. And obviously, home's home. No matter where you grow up, you're gonna have a soft spot for that place. So, I mean, I think Canberra's the best place in the world.
And what about your overall relationship with Australia? Because you do tend to sometimes get your toughest reviews there as well, don't you? Is this just a part of being part of a kind of country with, a lively media scene?
Yeah, of course. It hasn't been easy for me, especially, you know, after Australian Open, losing early. I think at times I get treated a bit unfairly. But, you know, in saying that, so do some other athletes in Australia, but... You know, at the same time, I just feel like things can change. You know, everyone likes a winner, so, you know, if I keep winning and keep having good results, they seem to like me, but obviously that's the way it goes.
We gave Andy a tough time as well when he was a kid, you probably know that.
And then he started winning, so that's the solution, I think.
So, John was telling me your sporting hero is Adebayo or Mayweather, Kevin Garnett, is that right?
Yeah, that's about right. I like those three guys, I think. I mean, Adebayo always is, I think he was just entertaining when he played Premier League. I don't even know where he's playing right now, but I still follow him on Instagram. I think he's just cool. I play FIFA a lot, and that's who I always use. But Garnett's probably, you know, the sports person I looked up to the most growing up, and just the emotion he played with. And I mean, I just like Floyd because he's the man in the ring. He doesn't lose.
Okay, but you... So the other one I was going to ask you was the cause last three slams seems that you've had some physical things each time. Do you feel like you'll get to the point where your body's going to hold up for this kind of the fortnight five setters?
Of course. I mean, I made quarterfinals twice. You know, I know that I can go the distance. I've played a lot of five setters. I think the last couple of Grand Slams, I've had a lot going on off the court. I've found some clarity, you know, mentally. Of late, and I feel like, you know, I mean, Australian Open for me was a disaster. I think the couple of weeks leading up to the tournament, I wasn't in good physical shape. I was in a, you know, a tough mental space, and, you know, I think the last couple of times I haven't prepared the way I want to prepare, so, you know, I'm going to take, I think right now the way I am physically and mentally, I think it's, I mean, I'm levels above how I've been in the previous Grand Slam, so I'm confident.
How important is it to you that when you look back, you're going to be able to say, I made the most of what I had?
How important that is to me?
Yeah. Is that a big thing for you? Or is it something you ever think about?
Not really. You know, I don't regret anything I do or any way I go into things. You know, I think that's what makes everyone different. Obviously, I'm not going to be as serious as, you know, Nadal going into a match or you know, have the same routines, but that's what makes him so good as well. So I think everyone's different. Monfils, myself, Nadal, Federer, we're all different. That's what makes the sport entertaining and exciting, having different people, and they bring different things to the sport.
Monfils and Song are your big PlayStation mates?
Yeah, Monfils is. Song is a bit He's slowly settling down. He's just had a kid, so I don't think he'll be playing too many computer games.
Not much time left for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you buy a place in the Bahamas?
I did, yeah.
Is that partly because Leighton's hanging around there and you're going to hang out? Or?
Yeah, I mean, he just recently opened a tennis academy, so, you know, he's obviously... I mean, I love that place. I mean, I've been there a couple times now, and it's just a good place to get away, and obviously to have a base away from home is important, especially if you live in Australia.
Sounds a bit more exotic than Epping.
Yeah, a bit more relaxing than Canberra.
A bit more relaxing. I thought Canberra is not the sleepy place.
I was just being sarcastic.
Yeah, okay. And just coming back to Andy, you're 4-1. You're 4-1 against the other big four, aren't you?
Yeah.
And you're 0-5 against Andy. I mean, it's an easy assumption to make, but it's not because you like him too much, is it?
No, but I think, you know, the last couple of times I've played him, I haven't been in the best mental state. You know, every time I've played him, you know, I think my game at the moment is a lot better than how it was when I played him last. But I think every time I play him, you know, I mean, at Wimbledon I had a lot going on. Obviously, yeah, it was a tough playing him. I mean, he was playing unbelievable that week. But I think if I played him again, it would be a lot of fun. You know, I'd love to play him again and give him my best shot. I think where I am right now is he's gonna be very competitive against him. But in saying that, you know, he can still beat me again. He's very good. So.
With not having a coach, how much do you think about your game plan? Because I was watching you against Novak, you seemed to be mixing it up in what seemed to me to catch him off balance, because sometimes you were playing slow, sometimes you were playing fast and coming in. Is that instinctual? I mean, you seem to have a pretty high tennis IQ, but how much do you kind of work it out? Because you've got nobody to sort of sit down with before the match. Well, I suppose you can sit down with John maybe. But
yeah, I think my tennis has always been based on instinct, you know, how I feel out there. You know, I know tactically what to do against any player. You know, I know.
Just happens automatically.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm pretty switched on out in tennis court. I know what people's weaknesses are. Everyone knows what everyone's weakness is. It's just, you know, how are you going to expose that on the day? And you know, I don't think you really need a coach for tactics. I think we all know how to play. We all know what to do. It's just how you execute on the big stage. So I know that Novak, you know, he's an unbelievable athlete. He likes pace, so. If he likes pace, that means you slow it down.
Well, I guess you've got a lot of options as well, but not everybody can do the slow, quick, slow thing, can they?
Yeah, definitely. I think, I mean, I've served unbelievably well both times as well, which has helped me create pressure on his serve, so, yeah.
Okay, cool. Nice one. Thank you for time.
All good.
So that's Nick Kyrgios with Simon Briggs of The Telegraph talking in Miami last month. And from there, he went to Brisbane in Australia and helped his country win their Davis Cup tie against the United States, winning both of his singles rubbers. Captain Leighton Hewitt was very, very impressed with what he saw.
Oh, yeah, he did everything right. You know, he came back after playing a lot of matches over the last probably month and a half, last 5 or 6 weeks. And, you know, we were, I guess for us, it was about trying to keep him in a really happy place and keep him mentally strong and fit going into the matches. But he still had a lot of pressure and expectation on him. And I think the pleasing thing for me was how he went out there and embraced that and handled it. It's not always the easiest thing going out there and playing in front of your home crowd when, you know, you've had some good results against big players and they expect you to go out there and just get the job done. But, you know, how Nick handled it and embraced it and really soaked up the atmosphere. And, you know, I think it's going to be a telling weekend for him in his career.
And you mentioned it's come off the back of a number of very good results for him. But I mean, what impressed me is the fact that he hasn't had any sort of letdown. I remember at the end of the year when he had his issue in Shanghai, it came straight off the back of a brilliant week, and it seemed to me almost as though a couple of times he's almost hit the wall and then struggled to back it up. But that has not been the case in the last couple of months.
Yeah, I think that's been a big thing. After the Australian Open, he lost earlier the Australian Open, he was pretty disappointed and I spoke to him and got him to come back and, come around the other teammates for the Davis Cup before we played our first round tie. And I think that was massive key for him, just to sort of shrug off that loss and see that there are other people that really had his back as well and that were supporting of Nick and were going to help him through the tough times. And I think to him then that he saw this as a a group that he can sort of lead into the future as well. And he took a massive responsibility with that, which is probably the most pleasing thing for me, because the way he's been going out there and helping our younger guys and you know, guys like Jordan Thompson, Alex Diminar, these kind of players, has been remarkable the last couple of months. And we've had a group chat that you know, we're all on as well. And for me, it's not just about supporting these players through the Davis Cup weeks. It's actually all year round, because it does become pretty lonely out there on the tour. And I think for Nick, having that support week in and week out for a whole, from a whole lot of other guys has really helped him. It's given him a lot of confidence. Even if he does lose a match, you know, everyone's on there speaking to him, letting him know, you know, how well he's done. And I think that he feels like he can push on from there.
And I mean, he is, I think it's fair to say, a very different character to you, but you appear to have really forged a bond. What do you think gets the best out of him from your perspective? I mean, I always feel as though there's not a one-size-fits-all with tennis players. You know, you're human beings, first of all.
Yeah, I think for me, in my role, has been learning about people, even away from tennis. And, you know, something I really tried to do towards the end of my playing days with these guys, once I knew I was going to be Davis Cup captain, was really trying to learn to know these guys on and off the court and what makes them tick. And I think once you understand that, then you understand how they're going to deal with pressure in different ways. And so, for example, me talking to Jordan Thompson under pressure or in a tough situation is totally different to talking to Nick. And I think that's something that's really helped me in my role with Nick. He is a different personality. But we've tried to put things in place where he's had good people around him to support him as well. You know, a guy like Matt Reed, who's been a big part of our Davis Cup squad as a hitting partner and a guy that sort of helped out with travel weeks with some of the guys, he's done amazing with Nick over the last, you know, probably 2 to 3 months now. And just makes it a lot easier for Nick to go out there and enjoy his tennis as well and probably not get quite as homesick.
Homesick, that's quite interesting, because when the interview I heard him do with Simon Briggs for The Telegraph, he comes across almost surprisingly as a real sort of family man, somebody who gets lonely on the circuit. And I imagine that is a challenge he's going to have to get used to and find ways of coping with over the years to come.
Yeah, well, I think that's why scheduling is such a big part of what's going to really help Nick become a top player, because, you know, it does get pretty lonely out there on the tennis tour when you're traveling. And for a guy like Nick, you know, he's lucky he's got Isla, his girlfriend. Now he's put things in place with Matt Reed to have another mate around him for a lot of the time as well. So it's about putting these structures in place to make him feel as comfortable as possible. But there are still going to be tough times, and that's where he's got to be really smart with how many tournaments he plays in a group before he goes back and has a couple of weeks off. And you know, that's trying to find that really good balance for him.
Do you think, Leighton, certainly as a media and maybe as a public, have we got him wrong? Have we misunderstood him? I mean, obviously, people get criticism, sometimes fair, sometimes not. He's done some things that haven't been great. I'm sure he would accept that. But do you feel that we have misunderstood who he is?
Oh, I think at times, for sure. And I think it's kind of like a snowball effect. Once someone does something, even at a young age, and you're under the spotlight, it keeps getting brought up all the time then. And, you know, I think certain people, including myself, have felt that over the years as well. So for a guy like Nick, he gets quite defensive when that happens as well. And, you know, that makes it hard for him to actually open up and for people to see the real Nick Kyrgios. But, you know, he's certainly done things that he's not proud of. But it's all about maturing as well and learning from those experiences and hopefully getting better as a tennis player, but better as a person, dealing with those stressful situations when he's put in them next time. You know, sometimes we tend to forget he's only 21. He's been in the spotlight for quite a few years now, ever since he especially had that big win against Rafa at Wimbledon. And, you know, he's still learning how to deal with that.
He is a very different type of player to yourself. You had a generation where you followed Rafter. You were in there with Philippoussis. How talented is he compared to you and those other guys?
Well, he's probably more talented than me. You know, he's actual, the talent that he has and how the shot-making ability that he has is pretty remarkable. You know, the things he can do on a tennis court, and I think sometimes it comes a little bit too easy to him, and that's why we do see some of the different shots for him, because he sort of gets bored out in the court sometimes, I think. And so that's why it's so important for him to remain focused and concentrate and stay in the moment as much as possible. And I think for me, that's been one of the most pleasing things over the last 2 or 3 months. He's been able to really do that. He's been able to knuckle down and focus on absolutely every single point out there.
That's something actually he was saying, that he seems to have almost started to develop an enjoyment out of trying hard, out of competing for every point. That seems to almost have become a bit of a badge of honour for him.
Yeah, well, I think the other thing is he can really then see how good he potentially can be. You know, until you commit to the sport and commit to yourself to go out there and give every single point your best effort, you're never going to know how good you can be. And I guess in some ways, you know, maybe he was scared of that as well. You know, and I think now he's at a time and a place in his life that he's ready to take that responsibility and have a real crack.
How good do you think he can be?
Well, it's hard to say. You know, the tennis that I've seen, yeah, he's nearly in the top 10 now. Obviously, you know, top 5 would be the next goal. But certainly, you know, the next goal in terms of majors would be to try and make it down to the semi-final, something that he hasn't done before. And then he has the game style to beat anyone on any given day. You know, if you look at Milos making the final of Wimbledon last year, I think something like that would spur Nick on. Because in my mind, he's as good a player, if not better. He has probably a more complete all-round game. And I think he can play on all surfaces as well. You know, even on a slow clay court, he has the fire and, you know, the firepower and weapons to be able to hit through guys. But he actually moves really well for a guy that's 6'3", 6'4".
And he's already said he's going to come to Queens the way you used to do. He's excited about playing on grass. He says, in his view, that's his best surface. Do you think he's capable of winning Queens, Wimbledon one day?
Oh, one day, for sure. Absolutely. You know, Queens and Wimbledon, you know, right at the moment, you've still got, you know, obviously Andy and those boys that are extremely good, especially on those kind of grass courts. But Nick's up there. You know, you look at last year at Wimbledon even, and, you know, it takes a guy like Andy to beat him. So, you know, he's going to be very competitive this year at Wimbledon. I think if he's in the right headspace and going out there, I think over 5 sets he's going to get better as well over the next couple of years. But he's certainly not a dark horse, but he's in that next group after the top, you know, 4 or 5 players to win Wimbledon.
And just final question, Leighton. The match that I think we'll be talking about all year was the one he played against your old rival, Roger Federer, in Miami, that 3-tiebreak match. Can you believe what you're seeing from Roger Federer? I mean, this guy was coming up with you.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. You know, one, how he's been able to keep his body in such good condition for so many years. I know he's had a few niggles and injuries the last year or so, but still, you know, how sharp and how quick he is, agile around the court is remarkable. And even with Nick's kind of power, you know, Roger's one of the guys, probably maybe the only guy that can take that power away from him by, you know, bunting back a lot of serves, and he gets to play on his terms then. He has such a good transition game that puts guys under a lot of pressure and puts them on the back foot. But, yeah, it's remarkable what Roger's been able to do this year. Yeah, I don't think anyone would have thought that he could go out there and win Indian Wells, Miami and the Australian Open.
It's a great story. Great story for Australia reaching the Davis Cup semis as well. Many congratulations.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you, mate.
Thanks for your time.
No worries. Thanks, Dave. See you, mate.
So there's Leighton Hewitt, and as you can tell...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Well, he's had a pretty profound effect on Nick Kyrgios, seems to be helping him go in the right direction. And if he can do anything to embody the sort of performances he used to put up and the attitude he used to have inside the skill set of Nick Kyrgios, my goodness, we will be in for something pretty special. The man who did the interview with Nick Kyrgios is Mr. Simon Briggs of The Telegraph, and you can read his piece on The Telegraph website and in the newspaper as well. A huge big spread on Nick Kyrgios, who, Simon, is somebody you've obviously been following very closely ever since he started his career. But as you said in your piece, and I think as you've probably got to grips with in that interview, it feels like change is coming, and he does appear to be grasping what's required now.
Yeah, I think he's decided that he's going to measure himself maybe less on results and maybe more on the amount of effort he's putting in to the sort of basic elements of training and competing. It's about maybe not getting quite so up and down, isn't it, in the course of touring the world. And it's a difficult skill to master if you're one of those people who you feel he might have been one of those characters at school, you know, a little bit kind of short attention span, full of bounce and brio, incredibly talented, but needs to learn to settle to things and kind of persist with things. And that's taken a little bit of time, but now he's doing it. He's able to express his unbelievable talent.
One thing that came across in the interview that perhaps I was a little bit taken aback by, I was surprised to find out, is how much his family means to him. Not that he wouldn't be a family man, but I mean it seems pretty much everything he's about, you know. We've seen over the last couple of days very sad news that his grandfather has passed away, and he's been posting regularly on social media his thoughts and his opening his heart really about that, hasn't he? Did that come as a surprise to you? I mean, when you sat down with him, is he what you expected him to be?
Well, he's still quite the cool sort of kid, the sort of teenager. I know he's 22 now, but he's still got that sort of street edge to him, and he's pretty sharp. If you say something pretty daft, he'll pull you up on it and take the mickey out of you, but not in an unpleasant way. You know, I find him entertaining and engaging, and obviously we did end up talking a lot about not only his family but Alia Tomljanovic, who, if anything, you know, has been the most important single person in making him feel more comfortable in himself and making him relish the tour a little bit more. Because he saw how downcast she was when she had shoulder surgery and she wasn't able to play or train. But yes, I mean, you see Christos, his brother, around with him, a very easily identifiable figure. And his mother, Nil, was in Miami when I met him. She was there every day with John Morris, his agent. And his father, George comes to Wimbledon every year. So it's almost like they take turns a little bit, don't they, to sort of, I mean, I'm about to say hold his hand. That sounds a bit patronising, but there is an element of that, and I don't think that's a bad thing.
No, and I think we've seen that with other players. I mean, I'd even say we've seen that with Andy Murray over the years, haven't we? Having a close-knit group of people around, as much, I mean, certainly in his early years, part of it was to help his game along, but I think part of it as well was just to not feel lonely, to feel like he'd got company, could have fun in his own little group. And I do think that that is probably underestimated on the tennis circuit, what a lonely place it can be at times. We talked to Leighton Hewitt about that a little earlier. Just finally, Simon, on Kyrgios, the fact that we're doing a tennis podcast about him using your interview, the fact that you've done a double-page spread on him, shows the sort of star quality, I suppose, that he has, that we're all taking notice. How big a deal do you think he is going to be? Do you see him as the person who is going to be commanding most of the attention over the next couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people have said that the obvious inheritors of the Big Four crown, Nick Kyrgios and Alexander Zverev, who happened to play each other twice in the last few weeks. I actually looked at the race today and was surprised that he wasn't all that high. I think he was 11th, Nick, because it feels to me like on the level of his performances, you know, the best two players in the world this year have been Roger Federer and probably Rafael Nadal, and Nick's been as good as anybody, maybe, you know, not far off Nadal's level. He hasn't played a great deal since the American hard court season. He hasn't played at all, I should say. And he's not somebody who's going to be doing a Dominic team and going from one tournament to another one every single week. But the level that he's shown seems to me this year to have been up there for Grand Slam finals, Grand Slam semi-finals, maybe not Grand Slam titles quite yet. He's obviously got a physical point to make to prove that he can stick a fortnight of best of five set matches. But on his level, he seems to me to be pretty close. And with any luck, he'll keep on improving.
Yeah, well, it's an exciting story to follow. It's great to see that he's finally putting it all together, because he has been a hugely frustrating figure at times over the last 2 or 3 years, and that does appear to be improving this year. Simon, lovely to talk to you. Thank you for doing that interview. Hope you've enjoyed it here on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, of course. Follow all of Simon's stuff on The Telegraph website and in the newspaper, and with Eurosport, of course, too. And we'll be back with more Tennis Podcasts in the weeks to come.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.